Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN Radio with Dr. Anna Brutlog is the Vice President of Veterinary Services and Veterinary Toxicologist, but a senior veterinary toxicologist, though she is not a senior, at the Pet Poison Helpline. Dr. Brutlog, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, we're right around the corner from Halloween, blah, 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 blah. And it is very scary because here's what happens. Our pets go to emergency rooms all the time about around Halloween. I would suggest almost always the problem is avoidable. So I want to go through some Halloween concerns. I want to begin with candy. It's not only, I suggest, the candy that can be a problem, but the bigger problem, my guess, is what the candy is, the wrapping around the candy. If the pet noshes on like 8 or 10 or 20 of these things, is that the case?
Oh, it absolutely can be. So you're right. I mean, the candy still can potentially be a problem depending on what it is. So we always worry about things like dark chocolate, especially. That's always something to be concerned about. Or if, as we're seeing more and more, sugar-free candy. So if it's candy that's sweetened with xylitol, otherwise known as birch sugar, that particular sweetener, although it's a natural substance, it is actually quite toxic for dogs. But you're absolutely right to the packaging. So imagine you have a little dog that eats, 20 Hershey's Kisses, right? And of course, they're not always going to take the time to very politely unwrap each one. So now, not only do you have some potential issues with the chocolate, but you also got all of that packaging. So both of these things can be quite a problem.
You know, I think of candy. I don't think of chocolate. To me, that's in a separate category. But you brought up xylitol, and we'll talk about chocolate in a second. You brought up xylitol or birch sugar. First of all, why did they rename it or rebrand it as birch sugar? Do you have any idea? I haven't a clue.
Well, I don't know. I don't know, I have to say. But it is, and it's not, it's still accurate. It is actually a sweetener that historically, at least, has been made from birch. It's also found in, xylitol is actually found in all sorts of fruits and veggies too, in just very low concentrations, like too low to be harmful for pets. But my suspicion is perhaps maybe birch was one of the original sources of a lot of xylitol.
And here's where those two things come together. So let's say you're making brownies and you want it to be, because you're on a diet, you want it to be low sugar, so you use an artificial sweetener, and xylitol may be a part of that. So now you've got chocolate in the brownies and you have xylitol. We can get a pet in big trouble, a dog specifically, big trouble really fast, I suspect.
Oh, absolutely. Now, let's say perhaps you are not on a diet any longer and you want to add macadamia nuts to those brownies.
No.
Delicious, right? I know. Now we have a triple threat.
Yeah, talk about macadamia nuts and why that's a threat.
You know, it's so odd. Most nuts are not poisonous to dogs, but macadamia nuts, and we don't really know why, but macadamia nuts are, and it only takes, maybe like a nut or two kind of per pound of body weight. So they still have to eat at least some, even for a small dog. And it causes neurological signs, especially in like the hind end of a dog. So it makes their hind end really kind of weak. They sort of have more stumbly in their hind end. They can even have, kind of almost temporary paralysis, even if the dose is high enough. Now, they will, most of them will, should recover. Sometimes they need some medical care to really support them through that. But in the end, they should do well. But it is definitely a bit of a mysterious toxin.
Yeah, it's scary, too. If your dog has several macadamia nuts or a product that has macadamia nuts in it, the dog can, as I understand it, just collapse. You mentioned paralysis. That happens. And even if the dog recovers, that's a scary, scary thing to go through. Also, people are confused. Is my dog having a seizure? What's going on?
Of course. Yes.
All right. So I want to talk about, so we've talked about the macadamia nuts. I don't know that people give macadamia nuts so much when they go trick-or-treating, but here's what sometimes happens. You go trick-or-treating and people say, well, I want to give something healthier to all the kids, and they give raisins. Can we talk about raisins and dogs?
Yes. So another one that is a kind of just a common human food that who would have thought, right? Dogs would have a problem with raisins. So, but they do. And it's raisins, also grapes, of course. And so when, and this is fairly dog specific, although there may be, we're learning, there may be some other risk to other species, but really the main point, especially around Halloween, the main thing I'm concerned about are dogs. And if the dogs do get into raisins, like those little trick-or-treat boxes of raisins are kind of that perfect example, they actually cause kidney damage in dogs. And so we're learning more about this. We're trying to figure out, we think maybe we've figured out actually what the compound in raisins is that causes the problem. Potentially it's something called tartaric acid, which is the same thing in cream of tartar, if that sounds so tartaric acid. You may pull it all together. But yeah, raisins are definitely something that we do not want to feed or allow our dogs to get into. So something to keep well out of reach, just like everyone would keep chocolate out of reach of a dog.
So you drop a raisin on the ground and, oh, it's under the counter. I can't get to it, or I'll get to it later. I don't know where it went. Can one raisin cause a problem?
Usually, probably not, especially if we're dealing with a dog that's, you know, maybe 10, 15 pounds or more. One, probably not an issue. But if it is a dog that's 10 pounds or less, which of course there are a lot out there, you know, potentially one raisin actually would be enough to cause a problem.
You know, it seems that people have gotten the message regarding chocolate. But has that been overdone? I want to talk about that when we come back. I also want to talk about some other concerns having to do with legalization of weed. And our pets, do they smoke? Well, no, that's not really the question, Dr. Brutlag. However, it can be an issue for pets, and we'll talk about that when we come back on WGN. Dr. Anna Brutlag, Vice President of Veterinary Services and Veterinary Toxicologist. Now I ought to do that again. Senior Veterinary Toxicologist at the Pet Poison Helpline. Explain, Dr. Brutlag, what the Pet Poison Helpline is.
So we are a 24/7 animal poison control center. We take calls from pet owners and veterinarians from all over North America. And we are really the folks that your veterinarians turn to when an animal gets into something it shouldn't. So we are always here. We're always accessible. We have a website that has a lot of good educational information, PetPoisonHelpline.com, and we are here for you should your animal, your pet, eat something that it's not supposed to.
Is there a fee for this?
There is, yes. So when you are calling Pet Poison Helpline directly, there is an $85 fee. That fee covers that initial consult where we are talking to you, we're figuring out, is this a toxin? Is this a toxic dose? Do we have something to worry about? And we're giving information of what you can do at home if there is something you can safely do at home. If there's not something you can safely do at home, we're definitely recommending you go to the veterinarian, and then we will also speak to your veterinarian and help them and give them the tools and the information that they need to treat your pet. And then you can call back on that same case as many times as you need to for under that same $85 fee. Because sometimes, depending on what the toxin is, these cases can go on for days and weeks and potentially even months. So we're here for you through the whole thing.
All right. And that phone number is?
It's 855-764-7661.
All right. So here's this true story, Dr. Brutlag. I hope he's not listening because I know he listens to me, but we were doing some home construction, right? And great guy comes over and he and the person that he works with are talking about pot, and they're talking about how arthritic dogs, because we happen to have a dog who probably is 17 years old, but we don't know for sure, but she's around that, of course, has some arthritis, which we're treating. But he said the best thing is to give the dog weed. And I said, what do you mean? Dogs don't smoke it? He said, well, you can smoke it, and the dog will benefit by the smoke in the air. And I want you to comment on a lot of things here. THC and the difference between that and CBD, because CBD products are sold for pets. So it's a big topic, I know, but it's a problem that dogs are getting into something they shouldn't be getting into here. Not that it's illegal for dogs, but it can be dangerous for dogs.
Yeah, so a lot of things to comment on that one. So let's unpack a couple of things first. Okay, so I think, first of all, it is important to know, just like you pointed out, that there's a big difference between marijuana, pot, weed, I'm kind of using all those terms synonymously, and CBD. So marijuana, pot, weed, that has a compound called THC, which you just mentioned. THC is what we would, you know, people would use recreationally or for certain medical instances to induce that high, that, you know, especially in a recreational setting. That's what you're really, most people are after, is the THC in these products. So at this point in time, we don't think there's a lot of benefit for dogs and THC, at least at, you know, the same kind of dose as a person would use. So what chances are he was talking about, of course, as you already said, is maybe CBD. And there has been a lot of study out there looking at the potential therapeutic benefits of CBD, especially in dogs, for things like arthritis and other diseases as well. So while I think there certainly can be some therapeutic benefit there, it's really important that if someone were using CBD in their dog, just like you said, they are getting a dog-specific CBD compound, or they're working with their vet to make sure that the CBD that they're giving their dog is the right dose, but also it's the appropriate purity. Because this is still a big issue in the U.S., is having some states do a really good job of ensuring that the cannabis products that they sell are labeled appropriately. And if it says it has 5 milligrams of CBD, it actually has 5 milligrams, not 15 and not 2. So what's on the label should match what's in the product, but that's not, unfortunately, always the case.
Well, so yes, go ahead.
So I was going to say, so it's possible CBD, you know, may be an appropriate treatment. Mostly what I would say is there's also some really, really good treatments for arthritis out there right now. I would talk to your vet, because the other problem is when you have a pet that's maybe being treated with other medications and then you add CBD, that is just ripe for drug interactions. And that's an area that we don't know a lot about yet. What might CBD do? Could it actually make the drugs that that animal is getting less potent, more potent? Could it cause reactions and we could end up with liver damage? So definitely thinking about CBD, work with your vet, and they're going to be the ones to be able to really help you on those cases.
And along those lines, CBD is unregulated. So there's no guarantee, even if it says 2 milligrams compared to 10 milligrams or whatever it says on the label, that that label is correct necessarily. Now, there are some, you mentioned this, but I want to make a point of it. There are some products specifically created for pets that veterinarians overall do trust. There are others that are random. I mean, you can go to, I think, a Quickie Mart kind of place, a convenience store, and you can pick up CBD nowadays, right? A local gas station. I mean, certainly a drugstore. Everybody seems to be selling these things, and many are marketed for pets. I know one study was done and found arsenic in one of those products, which is not something you want to give a pet at all, obviously. So are you concerned, until this is regulated better, that people do exactly what you said, and that is contact your veterinarian? You hear that line a lot, but in this case, and a lot of cases, but in this case, this is why it's necessary.
Absolutely. No, you're spot on, Steve. Because of the lack of regulation, it is a bit of a Wild West and a buyer beware situation. So there are some very good companies that are making very good product, but there is also a lot of product out there that we know, based on testing that has been done, does not contain what it says it contains in the label. And just like you said, it actually can be adulterated. Hopefully that's unintentional adulteration, but it may be adulterated. It may contain THC. It may contain other medications, other drugs altogether. We've had, you know, some really kind of horrific cases where CBD products have been adulterated with significant amounts of caffeine or synthetic cannabinoids. So you're absolutely right. It is still a pretty dicey situation.
Now I want to talk a little more about THC, which is marijuana. So you can get one of the edibles, right? And the edible may contain chocolate. And then you put the edible up on a counter or some such thing and say, okay, I'm going to have some now. I'll have some later when I want to feel good again. And the dog gets it. So the dog is not only getting chocolate, but is getting THC. I know at one point in time, when Denver, I think, was the first city to say, it's okay, you could do marijuana. Now there are states all over the country doing the same thing. It might have been the whole state of Colorado, actually, that said it's okay. So now you've got all these states doing that. Are you seeing cases where the dogs are getting into THC products, and some of them might even have chocolate as well?
Yes, we see this every single day. Steve, not an exaggeration. We get multiple calls a day on pets getting into marijuana products. And oftentimes, it's like you said, they're getting into the edible products because, you know, hey, it's a brownie or it's a gummy. I mean, if it smells good and tastes good to us, it's definitely going to smell good and taste good to a dog. So this happens very frequently. And I would tell anyone, if this does happen to you, and it's an accident, accidents happen. We know that. So it's really important to either call your vet or call us at Pet Poison Helpline, because the sooner we get in touch with you, the sooner we can figure out what to do. And if there's anything we can do at home, such as potentially inducing vomiting to get rid of, you know, get that marijuana up and out of your dog, the sooner your dog is going to feel better, and quite frankly, the less expensive it's going to be, because you may not need to actually spend as many hours or days, even depending on what the dose is, in the veterinary clinic.
Perfect. Dr. Brutlag, we'll be right back and talk more about this and lots of other concerns to keep your dog and cat, yes, cats, safe as well. Next week, Dr. Gail Golab will be here of the American Veterinary Medical Association. There's this proposal that actually got onto the ballot in Colorado. There are a couple of proposals in Colorado that have to do with animals. One I'm about to tell you about. The other is to ban hunting of mountain lion or cougar. I mean, I can't imagine, really, that is still allowed. I mean, we criticize, rightly so, people who go over to Africa to hunt lion. How come we can hunt our own lion, mountain lion, or cougar? That's ridiculous, unethical, but also it plays with the whole scheme of things. We see more illness in deer as a result of that. Oh, so what the other proposal is, and what we'll talk about next week, is the idea of there being a mid-level professional, kind of like a physician's assistant of sorts in veterinary medicine. Is that a good idea? Dr. Golab will be here next week. Dr. Anna Brutlag is the senior veterinary toxicologist at the Pet Poison Helpline, also a veterinary toxicologist and vice president of veterinary services there. Dr. Brutlag, we're talking, when I cut you off there because of time, but I want to make a point that this is something you hear every day. So the HVAC guy, who's very good at doing his job, saying to me that dogs benefit by marijuana. Actually, the concern is that they could get into marijuana and get very, very sick, correct?
Correct, yes.
And there is an absolute difference between THC, which is active ingredient in what we call marijuana, or weed, or dope, or, well, I don't know. We can go through the other acronyms forever. Or CBD, which is a completely different thing. But even that, as we talked about, can be a concern as well. Now, I'm curious about one thing, and I should have asked you this way back, and I've been meaning to ask you this for my entire life. Well, maybe not that long. But I wonder about this. Our nutrition and our digestive systems are pretty much like a dog, really. So why is it that they say grapes and raisins are good for us, but they are so dangerous for dogs? Might they be a concern for us? And I know you're not a human nutritionist, but might there be a concern? Have you ever thought about this? If we eat too many raisins?
Well, tell you what, Steve, if you eat too much of anything, I absolutely guarantee you it will be a concern. So if that's what you're too, and this is always something toxicologists love to nerd out about, because really the standard quote in toxicology is the dose makes the poison. And what that means is, again, too much of anything could be a bad thing. Too much water. If you drink too much water, that can be poisonous. If you breathe too much oxygen, for example, this is why we wouldn't survive if our environment was, the air was 100% oxygen. That can actually be problematic. So I know that's not where you're going. I would say, I think there's pretty good evidence to suggest that grapes and raisins are not a problem for people. But the more we learn about dogs, yes, you're right. There's a lot of similarities between us, but there's also a lot of differences. And one of those differences is in the way a particular cell in the body transports certain types of compounds. And in the dog, those cells are very different from what we have as people. And that is probably the reason that grapes and raisins are toxic for dogs and not for people. It all boils down to this little cellular mechanism.
That's really interesting, actually. And it turns out what is also interesting is the most dangerous thing, according to you guys, actually, at Pet Poison Helpline, and one of the most common if not maybe the most common you hear about, you'll tell me, comes from our own medicine cabinets at home. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So we probably at least half of the calls that we get here at Pet Poison Helpline involve human medications. And we have seen a tremendous rise in accidental exposures to both antidepressant and anti-anxiety medications over the past couple of years.
Is it always accidental? Because I worry about this when I talk about, because we talk about behavior topics all the time on the radio. I'm a certified animal behavior consultant. I try to be very careful about not even mentioning the names of the anti-anxiety medications that may help a particular pet for a particular problem. However, others aren't so careful necessarily, and I worry that people go to their medicine cabinets, or maybe they read something online, and go to their medicine cabinets and take out the drug that they're using for an anti-anxiety issue, and then give it to their pet, thinking, okay, I could save money that way, or I could save time that way, or why not try it? Whatever they're thinking, and that is the cause of the problem. Yes, it's accidental, but they intentionally did that, if you follow me.
I do follow you. I think that does happen. And in those types of situations, it actually can be pretty dangerous. It depends on the medication specifically. Some medications, some antidepressant medications, some anti-anxiety medications Some of those antidepressant medications and anti-anxiety medications that we use in human medicine are also used in veterinary medicine. However, the dose may be quite different, right? We are not the same as dogs. We are definitely not the same as cats. There are massive differences here. So sometimes certain drugs may be safe for people, not safe for pets. Other times, those drugs may be safe for both cats, dogs, and people, although the dose can be quite different. And so that's why you're absolutely correct, Steve. It's extremely important in those types of situations when you're dealing with those types of drugs. Even though these are common pharmaceuticals, they can pack a really potent punch. So when we're dealing with medications that affect the brain, I want to be talking to someone who I know has a good understanding of those medications. That would be a veterinarian, because they're going to be able to help figure out what the appropriate dose would be for a pet. And does that pet actually need this medication? Might there be something better, something different, behavioral training? You know, are there lots of options that we may reach for, as you know better than anyone else?
The other thing is that I've had experience with this where people have told me, I've given X drug for separation anxiety. I went to my medicine cabinet because I use it, right? And it didn't do anything. So I gave the dog more and more. And that's what also creates a problem. And it turns out, had they asked their veterinarian, you would know the drug takes 6 weeks to kick in. So, of course, it didn't do anything.
Absolutely. Yes, classic. We definitely hear this as well, because you're right. And this is when they're working with their vet, they're going to know this. They're going to know that this is we need to give this drug for at least 4 to 6 weeks before we expect to see something. Now, if you need a medication that's going to act very quickly, such as, let's say your dog is really afraid of thunderstorms or fireworks, there are other meds that we can give that do. They act quickly and they leave the body quickly. But again, these medications are complex. And when you're dealing with meds that affect the brain, let's not mess around. Let's do it right.
And it's not only anti-anxiety drugs. I mean, I can't tell you how many times my dog gets car sick and therefore I give X to my dog, again, from my own medicine cabinet. And it's the same concern, I suspect. I just want to make a point of saying that this, or my dog is sneezing and I tried this allergy medication that I take. And it can be a decongestant, which is something actually that you can talk about, decongestants that we give, that we may get the prescription, I think, for people or over the counter, and you have to sign your name and do all this thing for a reason. But for pets, I believe decongestants, that D letter after the drug name, can be a concern as well.
Yes. In my world, I jokingly say that D letter stands for deadly. So when you're talking about pets, when you're talking about cats and dogs, you're absolutely right. Allergy medications like Claritin D or Allegra D, there's a variety of them. They can be great for people. It is, the D does stand for decongestant. If you're a pet owner, think D for deadly, because these are not medications that we want to accidentally give to our pets. They will cause significant problems. I remember I had a case with a border collie, and the pet owner was told by their vet, you know, your dog has allergies, please go ahead, give Benadryl, it's safe to do. They gave them the dose. And so they were doing their best to follow the advice of their veterinarian, but didn't realize that when they went to the store, what they had purchased instead of regular Benadryl was Benadryl D. And they were giving this to their dog, and their dog became extraordinarily ill. What it does is it causes a really rapid heart rate, an elevation in body temperature. It can cause tremors, seizures. It acts as a stimulant. And that dog ended up in ICU for several days. Thankfully, in the end, everything went well. But again, very common mistake, but it's something that's so important for pet owners to be aware of.
Well, there's more for pet owners to be aware of. And I'm curious as to what the craziest calls you've ever gotten happen to be. We will find out some of those from Dr. Anna Brutleg of the Pet Poison Helpline when we come back on WGN. Dr. Anna Brutleg, Vice President of Veterinary Services, a senior, the senior, the one and only senior veterinary toxicologist at the Pet Poison Helpline. We've been to events together, Dr. Brutleg. Can I say what I'm about to say?
Yes.
She knows what's coming. And you hear what's coming. She has the best laugh of anyone. You ought to hire yourself out to Hollywood and go to sitcoms and just be in the audience. You have the most infectious, wonderful laugh. I can't be the only one who's been telling you this.
Oh, you're very kind. You know, I think I've heard this a few times from my coworkers, and in fact, they went so far as to insulate my office walls because I'm a little bit too loud for the ones next door to me. So, yes, I have heard this.
So you've also heard crazy things from pet parents who have called and said, my pet has done X, Y, and Z. My pet has gotten into, you tell me what it is. What are some of the strangest calls you've ever gotten?
I think some of my favorites. One of them was this lovely gentleman in Colorado who had a delivery to his house. His dog chewed into the package that was delivered, and I finally have to say, okay, what's in the package? Because this is the money shot here. He had a freeze-dried rattlesnake shipped to his home. A freeze-dried rattlesnake. The dog chewed into the package, and of course ate large pieces of the freeze-dried rattlesnake. And he was calling because he and his veterinarian needed to know, could there still be venom in this freeze-dried rattlesnake, and could it envenomate his dog? So, you know, I have to say, that was a fun one.
Well,
the answer
there
is no.
Good.
By the point in time that the snake was freeze-dried, really the compounds that are venomous have been, really, they're no longer dangerous. So we at least didn't have to worry about that component of it.
And you handle all kinds of pets, including pet parrots, pet rabbits, pet ferrets, pet snakes, I imagine. What's the strain?
Pet pinkajous.
Yeah. What's
pet llamas, alpacas, otters, fox kits.
Otters.
And this has only been the last, you know, honestly, the last year. Yes, we had a fox kit that got into someone's marijuana. Speaking of marijuana, which we had talked about recently, we had someone's pet raccoon. It really goes on and on. I remember one morning sitting and I was working and I had a couple of other fellow toxicologists around me, and I was talking to someone about their peacock. My colleague to my right was talking to someone about their mini donkey, and my colleague to my left was talking to someone about their pot-bellied pig. And we all just kind of looked at each other with our eyebrows raised. So you never know what you're going to get when you're working here and you pick up the phone.
That is crazy. A pet otter. So otters are very cute. They're fun to watch. They're very playful. They're very social. But they're also voracious predators. I can't imagine having an adult pet otter, nor can I imagine it being legal anywhere. But maybe it is, Dr. Brutlag. I don't know. We've not talked about...
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think legality was not the primary concern. So,
what did the otter...
I would never recommend anyone keep a pet otter either.
No, no, no. What did the otter get into? Do you remember?
I believe that otter had gotten into medication. It was some type of pain reliever medication, like acetaminophen or ibuprofen. And this is so common. I mean, this is common amongst dogs, too. But it had gotten the hold of a little medicine bottle. And otters have very strong teeth. Of course, we think of what they eat in the wild, right? They're eating shellfish. They need to have strong teeth. And it had broken through into the plastic of the bottle. And potentially it consumed some pills. And so we were trying to figure out, all right, how much acetaminophen is toxic to this otter? And so, again, you never know what you're going to get, but that makes my job really fun.
What book do you look that up in? I don't know. We've not talked a lot about cats. And here's a question that I randomly get periodically. Can you give a cat too much catnip?
Oh, no, I don't know if you really could. I know I said the joke, not the joke in toxicology. I should say this is not a joke at all, but of course, the dose makes the poison, right? You can always have too much of anything. But I do think as much as some cats love catnip, they are they're fairly smart about how they use it. So I know my own cats love it. I will spread it on the fresh catnip. I'll bring it in from the garden. I will have dried catnip and put it on the floor and let them roll around in it. And, you know, I have to say I have never seen a cat truly poisoned from too much catnip.
Although what can happen, I believe, is that the impact or effect of that catnip won't be as great. If it's done like every day, 3 times a day, at some point in time, many cats, it just won't be as much fun anymore. It won't have the same impact. Vice President of Veterinary Services at the Pet Poison Helpline. This is Dr. Anna Brutlag. What is the email for the Pet Poison Helpline? The website is what I mean to ask.
It is petpoisonhelpline.com.
I didn't mean to ask your email address. That would be a bit too personal. This is not personal. What is the phone number for the Pet Poison Helpline?
The phone number, and this is 24/7. We are always here to help. The phone number is 855-764-7661.
Not only is she knowledgeable, quite brilliant, really, but she's also a lot of fun. Dr. Anna Brutlaug, thank you so much for joining us on WGN.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
October is National Pet Obesity Awareness Month. Now, why is this so important? All right, you ready for this? 59% of dogs are overweight or obese. 61% of cats are overweight or obese. This affects their lifestyle, the quality of life of our pets. And in fact, in a couple of weeks, we'll have Dr. Ernie Ward talking very specifically about what we know that impact is. But it also impacts lifespan. Yeah, that's right. Our pets are living longer than ever before, but they would even be living longer if there weren't so many overweight or obese pets. And something else that's coming along, I think it'll be here in 5 to 10 years, is it won't be called Ozempic, but it's the same idea. For weight loss, a drug specifically for weight loss for our pets. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks as well. See you next week, bright and early, on WGN.